Listen, the birds sing. Listen, the bells ring. All the living are dead, and the dead are all living. The war is over, and we are beginning.
Chapter 6. He stretched out on his back, lying on the floor and moping. Maybe when he'd first found his way back to the girls, he'd be embarrassed by his inability to do anything but sigh and frown. But it turns out that moping is not only allowed at the Barnes home, but encouraged. When Steve's checking in at the tower, doing public appearances and interviews, or reluctantly agreeing to train with S.H.I.E.L.D., he is all positive attitude and steady confidence. He uses his Captain America voice, turns on the quick-thinking, serum-enhanced, strategic part of his brain, and generally acts like someone who instantly and seamlessly adjusted to the 21st century. But here, with Rachel and Beck, moping is encouraged, so long as Steve is in a mopey mood. "Nope," said Rachel. Just this afternoon, when Steve finally got home, after another round of meetings with politicians, another round of refusing to join S.H.I.E.L.D. with Fury, and a punishing training session with Clint and Natasha, during which Steve completely failed to learn how to shoot an arrow. "No way. Uh-uh. You get that fake smile right off your face, Stephen. I won't have you faking happiness in this house." He argued for a good 3 minutes, saying, "I'm fine, Rachel," and, "No need to worry about me." But she just sighed and held his hand. "It's okay that you're not okay," she whispered. "You're allowed to feel whatever you're actually feeling. In this house, there's no Captain fucking America. You're Steve Rogers here, and no one expects you to be anything other than exactly what you are." So he let the smile fall from his face, let his posture go from strong and straight to hunched and defeated. He let himself be weak and small and so fucking sad. Hours later, even after Matzo Ball Soup and Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times, Steve's still allowing himself to be sad. "Guess what I learned today," he says from his position on the floor, where he's stretched out at Beck's feet. Beck sticks her foot out, resting it against his ribs and pushing gently to get herself rocking. "Something historical?" she guesses, without ever looking away from the TV. It's after 3 in the morning, and Rachel's asleep. Beck says she hasn't slept for more than 4 hours consecutively since she turned 75, and Steve doesn't like anything about sleep in the 21st century. They have soundproof walls now, and it dampens the city, makes Brooklyn unnaturally quiet. And even during the war, he had Bucky breathing somewhere near him. Plus, there are the dreams. Painful and true ones, where he lets Bucky fall. And false ones, where he saves Bucky, or goes with him. Which make waking up that much more painful. In the morning, it's like Bucky died all over again. Like Steve didn't die all over again. Rachel and Beck both sleep erratic, now that they're old as dirt. More often than not, one of them will be up when Steve's too shaken to attempt falling back to sleep in the middle of the night. Tonight, Beck's got on a documentary about the Civil War, of all things. Steve's been trying to catch up on history, but Beck prefers the 19th century for when she feels like relaxing. Sometimes it's nice to hear about something he had some prior knowledge about. A war that had nothing to do with his war. One that took place long before the world was shaped by big bombs and superpowers. "What did you learn today, Steve-o?" Beck asks, nudging his ribs a little harder. "That they built a wall right through Berlin, and then they tore it down," he says. Natasha likes to tell him Soviet history, like a normal person would tell ghost stories, with the lights turned low and her voice lower, building suspense with each word. There's been talk of getting him a history tutor, a S.H.I.E.L.D. history tutor. And Beck doesn't like the sound of that at all. She trusts all government agencies about as far as her frail old arms could throw them, and she made him promise to go over his lessons with her afterward. She's also given him books, insisting he start with the People's History of the United States. "Yup," says Beck. "Berlin Wall. Went up, then came back down. What else?" "That JFK was Catholic." "Didn't I tell you that? Could have sworn I told you that." "Sure didn't," Steve says, wrapping his hand around her foot. Her socks are so thick, Steve can barely feel her thin little bones. "Really knocked me back, that one. A Catholic president. Can you even imagine it?" Beck snorts. "Sure, I was there, after all." "Stop bragging, Rebecca," he says, tickling the arch of her foot gently. She kicks him away and laughs. "They shot him, though," Steve says. "Yeah. Today, I learned the world doesn't know shit about James Buchanan Barnes," Steve whispers. Beck stops rocking. She finally looks away from the TV, where they're talking about Cold Harbor, when Grant threw wave after wave of men at the Greybacks, until 7,000 Union were dead in a matter of minutes. But the Union still called it a victory. Somehow. "The world doesn't know shit about Stephen Grant Rogers either," Beck says. Steve sighs and goes back to looking at the ceiling. "Hawkeye," he says, reaching back out to hold her foot. "Clint. He was training with me today, and he's a fan, I guess. A Captain America fan." Beck grunts in response. "Guess he grew up with the comics, and his grandpa telling stories of how he served with the Howling Commandos at some camp in France. Could be true. Could be nonsense. Who knows?" "Everybody came back from Europe with a Howling Commando story. Only about a fifth of them are true, far as I could tell." Steve sighs a little, trying not to imagine Beck getting into it with random vets who were just trying to survive coming home with a Farseal Captain America story. "The point is," Steve continues, "Clint's a fan, and he started talking about his favourite character. It was Buck. Of course it was Buck. All Scrappy and the comic fucking relief. A sniper. He was rather good with a gun, wasn't he?" "Yeah. But that's what Clint called Bucky. A character. My favourite character," he said. "The world doesn't know shit about James Buchanan Barnes," Beck whispers. She sounds haunted, like she's still grieving. Like she's living with the guilt, like Steve is. "And maybe if it was just a comic book, that'd be okay," Steve says. "But the character story is all tangled up with our real lives. I mean, it was good to hear Clint talk about him, you know? No one but you and me and Rach talks about him like he's anything but a long-gone hero. So instead of shutting Clint down, I encouraged him to keep going, and he ended up telling me the story of how Bucky and I met. I don't even remember the story of how you and Bucky met." "Well, Rebecca, you weren't there, after all, on account of not being born just yet." Beck smirks. "Stop bragging." Steve laughs a little and closes his eyes. "How does Clint think you met my brother?" "Guess the popular theory is that Bucky happened by some boys beating me up in an alley. And he chased them off. Saved my ass." "Well," says Beck, "that certainly happened 1,000 times over." "Yeah," Steve says. "And the memories hurt. It's as sharp as getting shot. And his very special super soldier healing ain't so effective on heartbreak." "But it's not how we met." "Just tell me already, why don't you?" There was an alley and some tough guys, but I wasn't getting my lights knocked out for once, Steve says. That was Bucky.
Really?
Yeah, some Italian kids. Or maybe Russian. Don't really remember. But they were calling him... Well, you remember what they used to call him. Called you that too, a time or two. What? Says Beck, voice flat. Kike, or Mick. Rebecca, Steve murmurs. It takes her a moment to relax back into her chair. I saved him that first time. Stalked down an alley with a 2x4 in one hand, a broken bottle in the other. And we were still young enough that they weren't that much bigger than me. Chased them right off. Cowards. Nearly collapsed right afterward. Heart palpitations or something. Bucky ended up dragging me home to my ma, so I guess history's not far off. He did save my ass. Just not from any neighbourhood roughs. That's a good story. Steve hums his agreement. On the screen, the narrator is talking about Mary Todd Lincoln, reading letters she wrote to her husband, telling her story with her own words. If Mary Todd Lincoln were to crawl out of her grave tomorrow, miraculously alive after sleeping for centuries, would she approve of this documentary? Would she recognize herself in the character these historians are talking about? Would she feel like they got something right about her? Maybe not everything, but at least a fragment that indicates the legacy she left on the world accurately reflects the life she lived. Or would she be like Steve, completely baffled by the way he's remembered, by the way he's known? In the thick of the war, Steve didn't have time to breathe, let alone devote brain power to contemplating how history would remember him. They got it all wrong, Steve murmurs, staring at the ceiling again. Who now got what wrong? Asked Beck. My whole life, Beck. Everyone got my whole life wrong. Yeah. Did Ken Burns ever want to do a documentary about me? Beck glances down at him, and then picks up the remote in her lap. She pushes her glasses up her nose, and then carefully presses the button, shutting off the documentary and going back to the selection menu. She's slower than Rachel at navigating this technology, but she manages to find a different documentary, this one simply titled The War. You were supposed to be a whole episode, she says, scrolling so Steve can see the title of each. You and the Commandos. Episode 8, I think. His people got in touch with Rachel's people. Happens all the time. Historical types wanting to know more. But Rachel gave up on talking to them ages ago. There was a lawsuit where Rachel and Peggy tried their damnedest to get them to stop using your face for their own agendas. But it didn't work. They said you were in the public domain. Rach got pretty hostile towards anyone asking her questions about Captain America after that. Huh. Steve smiles as he imagines Peggy and Rachel teaming up to defend his honour. You still gave some of our stuff to the Smithsonian. We didn't give them anything that mattered, Beck says. Her hands fist on the arms of her rocking chair, and Steve sits up a little on his elbow so he can look at her face easier. It's too dark to see much, the glow of the TV reflecting off her glasses and hiding her eyes. We didn't give them anything that... She bites back a sob and then covers her eyes with her palms. Rebecca! Steve sits up quickly, his head rushing with the movement. What? What's wrong? She takes a big breath, wheezes halfway through, and then lowers her hands. It's my fault. All my fault. That history's got your whole life wrong. Now that you're back, I don't know if it was the wrong thing or the right thing, but it's certainly the selfish thing. You ain't selfish. Beck laughs like she's got dust in her throat. Course I'm selfish. I've been selfish with you and Bucky for decades. It could have done a lot of kids like we were a lot of good. But I was terrified of your memory just getting eviscerated if they found out Captain America was queer for Bucky Barnes. Steve shivers. He's not used to Beck saying it out loud. He's not used to Beck knowing at all. You know, queer is on the list of words S.H.I.E.L.D. gave me that are not okay to say these days under any circumstances, but especially not to the press. Steve muses. When Beck laughs again, it sounds more amused and less bitter. Yeah, I laughed too when I read it. But then I had to look all serious and patriotic because the agent working with me was staring wide-eyed, like she was responsible for Captain America losing it. Wonder what she would have done if I'd used that word to talk about myself. Beck snorts and shakes her head. Rachel wanted to go on camera, Beck says, after a few minutes of silence. And tell the whole story to the Ken Burns people. You and Bucky. All of it. Wanted to hand over all your letters from Bucky, all those sketchbooks full of his face. Things were better by then. We'd been married for a while, even. And for years, Rachel had been muttering about outing you. We'd been fighting about it since 1972. To help the movement, you know? If it's okay that Captain America was queer, then it'd be okay for everyone else so scared of it too. And with Ken Burns, I almost said yes. But I backed out at the last minute. He struggles to imagine it. Waking up in a version of the 21st century, where the whole world knew about him and Bucky, where it was just another part of the Captain America legend. It's impossible to say if it would be better or worse. Why? He asks. Beck shrugs. There was this rule, don't ask, don't tell, in the military. No open gaze allowed. It's done away with now, since last year. But I thought they would strip Bucky of every medal, every commendation, and I just couldn't stand it. Oh, says Steve. It was selfish, Beck says, her voice breaking again. He scoots a little closer, resting his head against her knobbly knees. That's okay. I'm glad you were. You're allowed to be selfish with Bucky, he insists. I always was. Oh, hush, says Beck. She runs her fingers through his hair. They stay like that for a while. With the TV off, it's so quiet, and Steve drifts off a little. I've been writing a book. Steve stirs a little and mumbles, thought you'd written lots of books. This one's different, she says. It's about you. I was gonna fix it. All the years of hiding, with this book. The official Steve Rogers and Bucky Barnes biography. Steve lifts his head from her knees and gapes at her. It's nearly done, she continues. Ready to be published within the year, probably. I was fully prepared to out you before you came back from the dead. Can I read it? Yes. And seeing as I didn't even know how you met my brother until tonight, I could use your help. Ever thought about writing? Steve blinks at her, surprised to see that she's serious. I didn't finish 8th grade. Eh, Beck says. How about I start with just reading it first, huh? Despite being much more confident in his reading abilities than his writing abilities, he stares at Beck's manuscript for 3 days before he opens the thing. End of the line, says the title page. Steve takes a deep breath and reads. Rachel is predictably late. Whenever they agree to meet up somewhere besides the bar, a rare occurrence. Steve shows up 30 minutes after the agreed-upon time, and he still beats Rachel by at least 10 minutes. She'd probably even be late for opening up the bar in the morning, if she didn't live right above it. Steve's been standing here for 6 minutes, alone with Bucky and his date, outside the diner where they'll be treating the girls to dinner before dancing. Zelda is beautiful, with her blonde curls and bedroom eyes, a dead ringer for Mae West. When they were introduced 6 minutes ago, she did not look at Steve as if she was relieved that she didn't have to set up one of her friends with an invalid. She even asked him about his aunt straight away, somehow more interested in his answer than Bucky standing right beside her, looking annoyingly handsome. Her knowledge of the Impressionist is extensive, and about 3 minutes into meeting her, she got excited about Renoir and spoke to Steve with confidence about a biography she recently read on the artist. But around Bucky, she seems a little shy, a little unsure. Bucky is being particularly cocky already, all charming grins and friendly touches. Steve bites back a sigh, exhausted when they're only 6 minutes in. He turns his body so he won't have to see Bucky throw an arm around Zelda's shoulders, putting his good ear away from them so he won't have to hear Bucky's low cadence and Zelda's answering giggle. They look perfect together. They sound perfect together. Bucky's ma will be thrilled. He's scowling at the pavement and considers just calling the whole thing off. But then Rachel appears, looking beautiful. Her dress matches her red lips again, and with those shoes her legs seem to go on for miles. There's extra sway in her gait, and Steve clenches his jaw, deeply regretting this whole terrible plan. Bucky's gonna think Steve paid her to be his date. It's the only reasonable explanation for why a girl like that would agree to date with a guy like Steve, whose inferior genetics are so painfully obvious to anybody just walking by on the street. Rachel's got a big grin for him, as usual. Throwing her arms around his neck when she gets close enough, she smacks a kiss onto his cheek, which is decidedly less usual. "Hi," Steve says. His smile is strained as he pulls away. "Oh, shoot," Rachel says, sticking closer to him than she would normally. She licks her thumb and rubs at his cheek. "We haven't even had dinner, and already I'm getting lipstick all over you." She gives him a wink, full of mischief, and Steve rolls his eyes, turning her around with a hand on her shoulder to make the introductions. He expected Bucky to be shocked by Rachel, because she's tall and beautiful, and not at all like the girls who usually agree to go out with tiny little invalids like Steve. Instead, it's Steve who gets the shock, because Bucky is blank. His brow is smooth, his mouth closed, not ticked up in its usual smirk, or ticked down in its equally appealing pout. There's not even a crinkle around his eyes, not even a hint of anything in them. "Rachel," Steve says, still intently studying Bucky's face, searching desperately for any kind of reaction. "This is Bucky." "Ah, yes." Rachel extends a hand. "The famous Bucky. Stevie here has had nothing but good things to say about you, mister. I'm Rachel. It's a pleasure." "Stevie," Bucky repeats. His movements are stiff, but at least he doesn't ignore Rachel's extended hand. "Right. Hi. Good to meet you. This is Zelda." Rachel's still got that ridiculous grin stretched across her face, but it slips a little when she gets a good look at Zelda. She's not subtle at all as she surveys Zelda from head to toe, and Steve pinches Rachel's elbow, a reminder that they are not at Sully's. They're just lucky Rachel's mouth hasn't fallen open in awe. She shakes Zelda's hand and looks slightly gobsmacked as she stares at Zelda. And Steve smiles, private and small and down at his shoes. "Who's hungry? We've been waiting out here long enough, I think," Bucky says, hustling them all inside. Steve shoots Bucky a glare for that little dig at Rachel, but now Bucky's the one busy staring down at his shoes, his hand on the small of Zelda's back, Beside him, Rachel stifles a giggle. He holds her back so they won't be overheard. "Who the hell is Bucky?" Rachel demands. At the same time, Steve hisses. "What the hell are you doing?" He blinks at her, before he realizes that Rachel only knows James. He's grown to trust her these last few months, but he's still been saying James instead of Bucky. "It's a nickname. Do you know how many fellas named James are running around this city?" He goes by Bucky. "Huh," Rachel says. "I didn't tell you 'cause, well, you know why. I didn't even tell you my name until last month." "Steve, it's fine. I like Bucky. It's a great name. Shouldn't we go in before they catch us out here yelling at each other?" He grabs her elbow again, yanking her back when she tries to move towards the door. She sighs down at him, disconcertingly tall in her pumps. "What?" Rachel says. She flutters her eyelashes and smiles, completely failing to look innocent. "What the hell are you doing?" he demands again. "I'm just going on a date with my dear friend Steve and his dear friend Bucky, and Bucky's absolutely stunning friend Zelda." Rachel. "I'm not doing anything." "You called me Stevie." "Huh. You know what? I sure did. Doesn't Bucky call you that? Like a nickname or something?" He deeply regrets telling her anything, ever. "And you kissed my cheek." "I kiss your cheek all the time." "You do not. What's the game here, Rach?" Rachel sighs. "I've got a theory." "Oh boy," Steve says, bracing himself for the worst. "My theory," she whispers in his ear, "is that your best pal Bucky wants you the exact way you want him, and I'm going to prove it by making him insanely jealous." "No, Rachel, no." Steve groans as Rachel drags him inside, suddenly reminded with painful clarity just why he's spent the last year not introducing them. "You look like a young Mae West," Rachel says after they put their order in. Zelda's cheeks turn a pretty shade of pink, and the two of them proceed to gush about Mae West until the food arrives. Steve wonders if Rachel is also thinking about that fairy who was in the bar last week, who introduced himself as Mae West. His hair was bleached blonde, but that's where the similarities ended, as far as Steve could tell. Rachel talks with her hands a lot when she's excited, and Zelda's attention obviously has her real excited, so she nearly swats Steve in the face half a dozen times. It's a delight to see Rachel out here in the world, interacting with people a little closer to her age, to see her interacting with a girl. At the bar, she's almost a mother, her words sharp and demanding. All the regulars respect her and dote on her, but she has no patience for any nonsense. Out here, Rachel's softer. Steve can't stop smiling at her. She's so lively and bright. They bicker gently about literature, even though Steve knows for a fact Rachel doesn't read much, despite all the novels Sully's constantly dumping in her lap. And Steve glances at Bucky, who's been almost silent since they ordered. "So where do you two meet?" Bucky asks, speaking too loud. He's attempting a smile now, but it's coming across a little flat. It's the way he smiles at his mother when she starts talking about all the girls she just knows Bucky will adore, all pinched around the edges. Bucky's also tapping his fingers on the tabletop with no discernible rhythm, and Steve feels a headache coming on, it pulsing unpleasantly in his temples with each finger tap. At the interruption, Zelda shoots Bucky a glare, but Rachel laughs, scooting her chair close to Steve and linking their arms together. "Oh, He chased off some guy that was giving me a hard time. The true story is pretty much the opposite, but Rachel very obviously had the time of her life, concocting and acting out some false story on the night they did meet, so he figures she's having the same fun now. Steve smiles, shakes his head, and feels no need to contribute. He puffed up his chest and demanded this hoodlum leave that nice girl alone. Her voice gets low and gruff as she imitates Steve, and it startles a laugh out of Zelda. You are so gallant, Steve. I see, Bucky says. He does not laugh or roll his eyes or sigh long-suffering. He does not offer a story of his own, when he's got about 100 Saving Stephen and Allie stories up his sleeve. Bucky was supposed to be shocked by Rachel. He was supposed to be shocked that she's beautiful and charismatic, with gams that go on for days. He was supposed to delight in her wit and give Steve a thumbs up behind her back, waggling his eyebrows and making Steve blush. He's my hero, Rachel says, laying her head on his shoulder and fluttering her lashes up at him. Stop, says Steve, but he still laughs out loud, despite himself. She looks ridiculous, but it gets less funny when she glances at Bucky before smirking back up at Steve. He really should figure out a way to put a stop to this madness, but Bucky's tapping his fingers on the table again, and Steve just doesn't. So, you think she's queer? Rachel whispers at the dance hall. They're leaning against the bar, sipping drinks and watching Bucky and Zelda twirl around. Bucky is probably too drunk for dancing, but he's managing all right. Zelda looks like she's having fun, anyway. Wouldn't get your hopes up, kid, Steve replies. You're a couple years older than me, Stephen, Rachel scolds. There's no reason for you to be calling me kid. Steve chuckles into his beer, feeling pretty light-headed himself. That's Bucky's fault, with all the rounds he kept buying before he decided he was ready to dance. And why shouldn't I get my hopes up? Rachel says. There's more of us than you think. I've got a good feeling, Steve. A good feeling. Okay, okay. I had this same feeling about you, and that worked out. Steve grins. That it did. I've got a good feeling about Bucky, too, she says, slipping her arms around his neck and bringing their faces close. Steve gets his hands on her shoulders and gently pushes her back. You do you? He says. She bites her lip and nods. He's staring right now. I'm going to make him jealous if it kills me. Should we kiss a little, do you think? Stop, Steve says, blushing hot and wriggling out of her grasp. No, absolutely not. Maybe he really is jealous, and he's just doing a good job hiding it. Is he the type to hide stuff? Steve frowns at her, realizing that to Rachel, nothing seems the least bit strange about Bucky tonight. To her, and to Zelda, Bucky's been nothing but polite and engaged. Sure, he's not nearly as charming and talkative as he usually is, but how would the girls know that there's something off about his smile? They barely know him at all. He's not jealous, Steve murmurs, watching Bucky dance. He's doing a fine job of that, too. Bucky's something all right, but it sure ain't jealous. No, I don't believe it. He adores you. He looks at you all starry-eyed. Don't you see it? What, are you blind? She demands, stomping her foot. A little bit, actually, Steve replies, smirking. Yeah. Rachel throws her head back as she laughs. I've got an astigmatism, Steve insists. The world's a little blurry. Rachel laughs again, her hand coming to rest on Steve's shoulder. Stop, he tells her, waggling a finger at her. Whatever you're trying to do, it ain't happening, and I don't like it. And then Bucky's staggering up to them, no concern for his date, who jogs behind him, trying to keep up. It's getting late, Bucky murmurs. Think I'm going to call it a night. Hit the hay. I've got an early morning. What? Asks Steve. No, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. You don't know my whole life, Rogers. I've got things to do. Things? What sort of things? Because the only things you've got to do on a Saturday morning is sleep till noon. I had fun, Zelda says, interrupting before Bucky can reply. Steve jerks, surprised to find that they are in fact in a crowded dance hall, and not actually alone. Rachel, who is turning her head back and forth with rapt attention as she followed their conversation, also jumps a little. Steve, it was lovely to meet you. Rachel, you promised to show me some sketches of that dress you're working on. I'm going to hold you to it. Rachel nods, blushing for the first time in the history of all the time Steve's known her. Bucky, you'll walk me home? She asks. Sure. We'll walk with you, Rachel says, scrambling around to pull her jacket out from the hook underneath the bar. It's on the way to my place. We'll walk with you. Do you even know where she lives? Steve hisses in Rachel's ear. She shoots him a scowl over her shoulder, before hustling Zelda into her coat and out onto the street. You don't have to cut your night short, Bucky says as they follow. Seems to be going pretty damn good. It's fine. Seriously, you should just take her somewhere. Take her back to the apartment. I'll see you in the morning. Steve snorts. No, that's definitely not happening. Steve, come on. Leave it, Bucky. Bucky sighs. You should marry this girl, he mutters, popping the collar of his coat up to protect the back of his neck from the chill in the air. The days are warm now, and they feel like spring, but the nights haven't caught up yet. Zelda and Rachel, it turns out, live in opposite directions. But Rachel absolutely insists that they all go together, first to Zelda's and then to Rachel's. Rachel hooks her arm into Zelda's, walking at a brisk pace. When she glares at Steve over her shoulder again, Steve gets the message and hangs back with Bucky. Zelda lives with an elderly great aunt in a bigger house that's fallen into disrepair in recent years. It's got four wooden porch steps that creak and shudder when Zelda gets a foot on the bottom one. It was really great to meet you. Zelda squeezes Rachel's arm. And Rachel beams. Really, Rachel, I mean it. It's harder than you'd think, making friends in the big city. Yes. I mean, yeah, me too. You'll read that book I mentioned? Of course. Good. She squeezes Rachel's arm again and turns. Zelda's halfway up the front steps before she remembers Bucky, loitering nearby. Bye, Bucky, she says, with a smile and a wave. When Zelda closes the door behind her, Rachel spins on her heel and gives Steve an extremely significant look. See? She seems to say with her eyebrows. How gay was that? On the way to Rachel's, Bucky lags behind like he's working hard to give Steve a little privacy. If this was a real date, Steve might even appreciate the gesture. Instead, he spends the whole walk back with Rachel on his arm, gushing in his ear about Zelda. He glances over his shoulder every few minutes to check on Bucky, because he can't help it. Even with the moon out and the sky relatively cloudless for this time of year, Steve can't make out the expression on his face. "You boys want to come in for a drink?" she says, thumbing over her shoulder at Sully's. From here, it just looks like any old bar. A little beat, the noise of the crowd just reaching them on the sidewalk. There are men standing around in groups, smoking, but they look normal. Just guys hanging around, enjoying one of the first nights of spring. Steve knows inside it'll be an entirely different story. "No," says Steve, glaring at her. Bucky does not need another drink, and Steve honestly has no idea how he'd react to suddenly finding himself in a queer bar. Steve doesn't know if his heart could take it. If Bucky got into Sully's and was horrified, disgusted, hateful. "This is where you live?" Bucky asks, frowning. "There's an apartment upstairs," Rachel replies. "It's just me and my uncle. He owns the bar." "Huh," says Bucky, crossing his arms over his chest. "Well, it was good to meet you, Bucky," Rachel says. "Yeah," Bucky replies, his voice soft and genuine. "You too. I'll be seeing more of you, I hope." "Oh, you will," she replies. Bucky's eyes pop out of his head a little when Rachel abruptly pulls him into a hug. But he relaxes slightly as he pats her on the back, watching Steve over her shoulder. "I'm so glad I got to meet you," Rachel says as she pulls away. "Yeah, yeah," says Steve. "You already mentioned that." Grinning a little, Rachel rolls her eyes and smacks him gently on the shoulder. "Go to bed, Bubbele," she says as she walks towards the bar. "It's past your bedtime." Steve and Bucky watch her cross the street. She stops to chat with the men out front, and Steve thinks he might recognize Raoul and Peter, but it's hard to say from this distance. "You should go give her a proper goodbye," Bucky says. "Walk her to the door of her apartment upstairs or something. I'll wait for you out here." "That goodbye was fine by me." "Did she call you Bubbele?"
"Yeah, so?"
"My grandmother calls me that."
"That sounds about right."
Bucky sighs, like he's a moment away from calling Steve hopeless. Instead, he just claps a hand on his shoulder and says, "Let's get you home, Stevie." For three whole blocks, Bucky's hand stays on his shoulder, and they both stay silent. And against his better judgment, against the lessons Steve's learned every time Bucky got him off and then went away, he hopes. Damn Rachel and her infectious hoping. Bucky wasn't jealous tonight, but he was certainly something. Sad, maybe. Resigned. Bucky was something, and it makes Steve hope. "It's not like that, you know," he says. "With me and Rachel." Bucky's fingers grip tight on his shoulder before letting go entirely. He doesn't say anything. "She's a friend," Steve continues. "A good friend."
"Really?"
And now he looks hurt, with a side of angry. "How long have you known her without telling me?"
"About a year," Steve confesses.
"Wow.
She's really just my friend."
"Whatever you say, pal," Bucky sneers. "I'm serious," Steve insists, looking up at Bucky, annoyed when Bucky won't look down at him. "That girl is wild for you," Bucky says. You should marry her tomorrow.
Bucky.
Steve tugs on Bucky's wrist until he stops walking. He turns to face Steve, sighing like it's some big inconvenience. Sighing as if Steve is some big inconvenience. She's just my friend, and it's gonna stay that way. Well, that's just stupid. You're just stupid if you don't go for it. I guess I'm stupid then, because it ain't gonna happen. Bucky scoffs and starts stomping away, going so quick Steve has to run to catch him again. Will you slow down? Steve demands as he starts to wheeze. Bucky stops immediately, murmuring apologies and rubbing Steve's back until breathing gets as easy as it usually is. They start walking again. Steve gathers his courage, resolves to be brave like Rachel. She was testing a theory, okay? Steve confesses. What theory? Bucky asks. That's her business, but it was nothing, I promise. You should just marry her, Steve, he says. I don't go around marrying my friends. Never seen you like that, Bucky says. You're so comfortable around her, relaxed, and you ain't comfortable around anybody. I'm comfortable around you. Bucky just clenches his jaw. Why were you so quiet tonight, Buck? I was fine. You weren't. Just tired, Steve. Nothing was wrong. No, you barely spoke all night. You didn't crack a single joke or tell a single story. And you're always telling stories. You basically ignored Zelda when we walked her home. Didn't even try to give her a proper goodbye. Need I go on? Bucky shakes his head and rushes the last block to their apartment, fumbling with his keys so he doesn't have to look at or speak to Steve. Steve follows Bucky up the stairs, dejected. He feels his hangover coming on. Already his head aches, and the beer ain't sitting right in his stomach, maybe stirring up his ulcers or something worse. He's planning on giving up and just going to bed, but then he thinks of what he'll have to tell Rachel next time he's at Sully's. The thought of confessing that he let them get so close to this thing that's been hanging between them for years, without saying anything. Well, it's just too shameful to contemplate. So, as he pulls the door to their place shut behind them, and locks it, he channels a bit of Rachel's courage. She was trying to make you jealous. Jealous over me, I mean. Bucky's eyes go wide, and he looks terrified, but he recovers quickly, his expression rearranging into one of amused confusion. Get out. That dame is nutty. She's not nutty, although she is pretty queer. Everything just sort of hangs for a second. Bucky halfway through kicking off his shoes, Steve still with his hands shoved deep in his pockets. Despite Rachel yammering at him for weeks now. You can tell him about me. Tell him all about me. Bring him in for a drink, why don't ya? Hey, and while you're at it, tell him to bring any lesbians he knows in, too. He doesn't know any lesbians. You never know, Steve. We're everywhere, I'm sure of it. Steve never really intended to tell Bucky, and certainly not like this. Look, he says, peeling his coat off his shoulders, just for something to do with his hands. He hangs it up slowly, deliberately, not looking at Bucky. She's my friend. That's mostly who I'm hanging out with when I'm hanging around the bar. And I've told her stuff, about me and you, how we used to be. She's got this idea in her head that you're hung up on me, like I'm hung up on you, even though I've told her 100 times it wasn't like that for you. It was just fooling around a little. But she had this idea in her head, and she knows I'm gone on you, and she wanted to make you jealous. So bottom line is, we ain't getting married. Taking a deep breath, he peeks up at Bucky, who looks just about as pale and horrified as Steve thought he would look. Steve. Bucky swallows. Steve watches his throat work and has to look away. I didn't know. I'm sorry. It's not. It's okay. Steve interrupts because he can't bear to hear the rest. He can't bear the rejection. He wants to get to the part in the morning where they go back to not talking about it. I set her straight at the dance hall. If you ever do end up spending time with her again, she won't act like that. Bucky stares at him for so long, the silence starts to get to him. I'm going to sleep, Steve announces. He kicks off his shoes and loosens his tie, and then just falls onto his mattress, fully clothed. He pulls his blanket up over his head and tries to calm his breath, his heart rate. The apartment stays too quiet. At some point, Bucky turns off the lights, but Steve never hears the familiar squeak of springs of the bed only a couple feet from his. He falls asleep before Bucky so much as moves. In the morning, Steve wakes up when Bucky gets up. He's doing his best to be quiet, but their bedroom door creaks, and after a sleepless night spent threatening over Bucky and trying to get his back comfortable, that's enough to rouse him. Steve gets his eyes open in time to see Bucky slip out of the room. More than the lingering aftermath of too much booze last night, he's sick with worry over what Bucky's gonna do now. For long months, they didn't talk about it, and that was fine. Nothing had changed. They were still Bucky and Steve. Surely, the foolish decision to let Rachel within 10 feet of Bucky won't be enough to change that. A few minutes later, Bucky comes back. Steve didn't expect him to reappear, and doesn't have the time to even pretend to be sleeping. Hey, Bucky says when he catches Steve with his eyes open. How's your back? Fine. Bucky purses his lips as he frowns and says, I made coffee. Thanks. Steve sits up on his elbows. Bucky comes closer, but instead of handing over one of the 2 mugs in his hands, he sets them both on the floor. He sits on the edge of Steve's bed, facing away. Steve studies the tense line of his shoulders, his perfectly straight spine that Steve used to envy so much. Steve fists his hands in his sheets to keep himself from reaching out to touch and lies back down. Buck, he whispers. In response, Bucky sighs, and then he lies down too, stretching out on his side and facing away. Steve should give him space, should push his back to the wall and give Bucky room, but he stays where he is. This is the first time he's had Bucky in his bed in years, and Steve stays where he is. It wasn't for you, Bucky mumbles. Huh? You think how we were after your ma? You think I made some big sacrifice for you, since you're my best pal in the world? Or what? You think you were just convenient, an easy way to get off? It doesn't matter, Steve whispers. He brings his knees to his chest, curling up in a tight little ball. Bucky huffs, and it gets even harder to keep from touching him. It does, he insists. It does matter, but you've been thinking all this time that it was just you, that you were alone and feeling about me, how you're supposed to feel for a girl,
So you went off and made this life without me. Started hanging out in a queer bar and making queer friends and probably being cruised by everything with eyes. Steve reaches out then, splaying his fingers on Bucky's back and feeling him tremble. Almost immediately, Bucky flips over to face Steve, lying on his side on the edge of the bed.
"Whoa," says Steve, startled by the sudden movement.
Then he tries to stay very still as Bucky settles with his head on Steve's pillow, convinced that if he breathes too loud or stares too hard, it will have Bucky up and fleeing. Bucky opens his mouth, struggling to find the words. He lets out a frustrated huff, pushes Steve's hair off his forehead, and then scoots forward until he's close enough to kiss Steve. And then he's kissing Steve. It's soft and tentative, nothing like the kisses they used to share. Those were hot and quick, secondary to getting hands down each other's pants, or hard, punishing presses of lips, in between reminders to stay quiet. Bucky kisses Steve like they've got time, slow and easy. And when Steve gets over his shock enough to kiss him back, Bucky relaxes against him, bit by bit. His hand stays warm on Steve's cheek, his lips parted and tasting like coffee when Steve traces them with his tongue. When Bucky groans, it sounds like relief. Steve rests his hand on Bucky's neck, his thumb brushing his Adam's apple. But when he gets greedy after a few minutes, tugging him closer, Bucky presses a closed-mouth kiss to the corner of Steve's lips and pulls back with a sigh. "You're fucking everything up, you know that," Bucky whispers. Steve hums back and stretches up for another kiss. Bucky's obviously dead wrong, because this is not fucking anything up. This is perfect. "Steve," Bucky says. "We should have never stopped doing this once we moved out of your parents' place. That was a real bonehead move on our part, Buck. We never did anything quite like this." "Yeah, imagine everything we could have done by now if we didn't stop. You should hear the fellas at the bar talk. There's so much we could do. I've got ideas. I've got plans. There's so much we could have been doing if we kept it up after we left your parents." "Steve." Bucky sits up a little and frowns. "We were moving around all the time, staying in flop houses or rooms with six other guys. Or the Gilman's attic. You would have gotten us arrested." Bucky lets himself be kissed a bit more. "Arrested," he mutters against Steve's mouth. "Arrested, Steve." "Bucky, we've been in this place for 2 years now. That's a hell of a lot of time wasted." "Maybe," Bucky says, shrugging. "I don't know. Figured it was a good thing we stopped. We couldn't go on like that forever. Best to be done with it young and start trying to find someone to marry." "Oh," Steve says, scooting away. "How's that going for you?" "Terrible," says Bucky. "I'm tired of it." "Yeah?" "Exhausted," Bucky says. He hides his face in Steve's hair. "My ma ain't ever gonna let me step foot back in her house without at least a steady, you know?" "Oh, Bucky," Steve says, reaching out to lay a hand on his jaw. This seems like the kind of thing he's allowed to do now, apparently. "No, no, I don't want to talk about that." Bucky turns his head to kiss the inside of Steve's wrist. It makes him shiver. "I'm just giving you fair warning, before I kiss you some more, that this doesn't change nothing. Someday, we're both gonna need to get married. Someday, there's gonna be wives."
so we'll worry about that someday.
Steve gets his fingers in Bucky's hair, tugging and insistent.
Now will you stop yammering and come here?
Bucky sighs, acting real put upon, like Steve's a complete nuisance. But he's grinning, wide and bright.
Always so demanding, but I guess if you insist.
Steve kisses him again, pushing and pulling until he has Bucky just where he wants him. Just where he's wanted him for years. Laid out on his back, Steve settles on Bucky's chest, between his legs. Against his palms, Bucky's heart is flying in his ribcage, and Steve's never been so happy. Bucky tastes the same as he used to, but kissing him has gotten better, somehow. It's so good. Steve truly believes for a minute that some days never gonna come at all.